Thank you very much. Very much, Al. I told Eric I think his lecture is a hard act to follow. But I'm going to be talking to you about the acute somatic effects of radiation and focusing particularly on the whole body radiation, the effects of whole body radiation exposure at fairly large doses. Now, by acute somatic effects, somatic, of course, means somatic cells, which are any cells really in the body, and by acute effects is used in the medical terminology to mean immediate effects or effects that occur shortly after radiation exposure. And this is opposed to genetic effects or carcinogenic effects, which are long-term effects, the kind of effects that Eric was talking to about. Also, I think it's worth pointing out at the start that these effects of whole-body radiation exposure are what we call non-stochastic effects. They don't involve single cells, but in groups of cells. The result is that they are primarily threshold phenomena, as opposed to a linear relationship where any dose you get down to, no matter how small, there is a probability of an effect. A threshold phenomenon means that there is no effect up till a certain dose, and we'll see for the whole-body radiation syndrome that is in the order of 1 gray or 100 rads. I tend to talk in terms of rads and rems because I'm so old-fashioned. In fact, French people used to say, why do you keep talking in old francs rather than new francs when the change occurred in 1960 or something of that sort? I lived there in the 1950s. As I say, I'm going to focus on the whole-body radiation effects, which probably any kind of a high-dose terrorism event is what the kind of exposure will be. I'll also have been asked to give a word about the effects on the embryo and fetus, which occur at much lower doses. Now, of course, the radiotherapists, if there are any radiotherapists here, they deal with, of course, much higher doses to specific organ systems. And a specific organ can take a much higher dose than would occur following whole body radiation exposure, and we'll see. I hope we'll soon see why. You have in your folder a 10-page outline, and I'm going to be lecturing from that outline. I hope it'll be useful to you because there's more in the outline than I actually will talk with you about in my hour talk. 100 years ago, two Frenchmen named Bregonier and Tribondeau looked at pathological sections of testis tissue. And by looking at this, they knew there was a range of different cells in different states of proliferation in the testes, and they came up with their so-called law saying that radiosensitivity was proportional to reproductive activity, to the dividing future of a given cell type, and inversely proportional to the degree of differentiation or specialization. Now, what this essentially says is that it is proliferating cells that are sensitive to radiation. A fully differentiated cell is a postmitotic cell that is not dividing, and cells that do not divide are not sensitive to radiation. And as I think we've heard earlier, radiation essentially kills cells by preventing their ability to divide. So with that in mind, let's look at the effects, therefore, the general effects that we expect to see in an individual. Now, there are three basic types of cell systems in the body. There can be static populations in which there is no mitotic activity, no divisions taking place, no increase in cell number. These systems are few, primarily the neurons of the central nervous system. We're essentially born with all of the neurons that we're going to have for the rest of our life. All that happens is that we lose them gradually, and so I'm probably somewhat less intelligent now than I was when I walked in the room this morning, although hopefully not too much so. There can be expanding populations. Obviously, we can't have an expanding population, or we'd all fill up the room here. But the glandular tissue during development, during adolescence, are expanding tissues, and tumors are expanding tissues. But most of the cell populations in the body are what we call cell renewal systems. What this means is that as the functional differentiated cells get old and die, they're replaced by new cells. So there's an equilibrium kind of situation where old cells die off and they're replaced by new cells. If I can master this wonder of modern science here, the first slide should come on. Look at that, would you? I was the last person in the world to give talks with 35 millimeter slides. In the last two cases, they had to rush out and rent a slide projector just for me. So I tell you, it's terrible to get old. This is just I'm supposed to keep near this thing. This is just a diagrammatic sort of representation of a cell renewal system showing the three compartments in this system. These compartments either can be contiguous with each other, as I'll show you an example in the gastrointestinal tract, or they may not be. The first one is the so-called progenitor compartment. This is where cell division takes place. This is where the stem cells are and where the initial cell divisions take place that are eventually going to lead to the production of functional cells. As these cells proliferate, there's no blackboard here to write on. I'm sorry. I planned to write on the blackboard. You can't win them all. What essentially happens is a cell here, a stem cell or a proliferating cell, will divide. It will give off, as relative cell division, two cells. One of these cells will remain as a stem cell, and the other cell will go forth and begin maturing. So in a way, this maintains the population in the progenitor compartment while producing cells that now move into the maturational compartment, the compartment where the cell now matures, differentiates, undergoes a specialization to finally move and become a functional cell. And this compartment, it can take several days or longer for a cell to undergo full maturation before it moves in and becomes then a functional cell. These are the fully mature differentiated cell. There's no cell division in these cells. And there's a finite lifespan to the cell. Now, depending on the cell type, this lifespan can vary markedly. For example, in the blood, white blood cells, the granulocytes, which are the most common type of white blood cells, have a lifespan of the order of 2 or perhaps 3 days, whereas the red blood cells have a lifespan of the order of 120 days. So even in the blood systems, this is a very large difference in the lifespan of the mature cell. Well, it's this lifespan which will largely determine the so-called turnover time in the cell renewal system. Now, the turnover time is the time it takes to replace all of the functional cells with new cells. And I think you can judge this is largely dependent upon the lifespan of the cell. So the turnover time for white blood cells would be 2 or 3 days. The white blood cells that I have now will all be replaced by new ones by the time I return from Marblehead on Sunday. Whereas in the case of red blood cells, the turnover time is going to be very long, of the order of 120 days. So what are the effects of radiation in a system of this sort? Radiation, of course, as we've said, will affect the progenitor compartment. It's dividing cells that would be killed by radiation. So a moderate radiation exposure may reduce the population of stem cells and dividing cells in this compartment by, let's say, 50%. How does the body react to this? Well, the way it reacts to this is by stopping any movement of cells into the maturational compartment. The stem cell will divide, it'll produce two new cells, and both of those cells will remain as stem cells in the compartment. And it will do so until that compartment is now fully repopulated. So the net effect is there's going to be a period of time in which there are going to be no new cells produced to undergo maturation. As I said, this may take several days, probably maybe 5 to 10 days. And then, of course, as those that compartment is depleted, providing there are no new cells produced here, there will be no new functional cells produced. So the effect of radiation is by blocking, in essence, the production of new mature cells, that it will lead to the block in the production of functional cells, and that dependent upon the life sign, the lifespan of the remaining cells there, there will be a drop and perhaps a complete, if the radiation dose is high, a complete loss of the functional cells. In the case of the white blood cells, this is going to occur pretty rapidly, I mean within a period of a few days. The actual effect will be delayed because there are quite a few mature cells here, maturing cells still to move along. In the case of the red blood cell, where their lifespan, mean lifespan, is, you know, 120 days, there's plenty of time for recovery here. And indeed, in the acute radiation syndrome, one sees very little effect on the red blood cells. Well, having looked at essentially the nature of a cell renewal system, let's look in the next slide. I pushed the wrong button there, but I'll get there. There we go. This table is in your handout. This just looks at the turnover time in various tissues. Now, from what we've said, you may judge that those tissues that are going to be sensitive to radiation are those with very short turnover times, which means short lifespan of the mature cell. If there's a long time, like for the red blood cells, which is 120 days, there's plenty of time for the system to recover, unless the dose has been so high that it's just killed all of the progenitor cells. Well, as we look down here, what strikes us here are the granulocytes and the platelets. The granulocytes are the white blood cells that are primarily involved in combating infection, and the platelets are those small little parts of cells that actually are important for the blood clotting phenomenon. So we focus here, and the next place that we would focus is right down in here, in the small intestine and particularly the distal stomach, where there's very, very rapid turnover times. And these, indeed, are the two systems that are primarily affected following whole-body radiation exposure. The skin, the epithelium of the skin, has a fairly slow turnover time, but as I'll show you, many of the people who have been exposed to whole-body radiation and have had the whole-body radiation syndrome have had, along with that, very high doses to the skin. So next, let's look at the effects in a couple of specific cell systems. Remembering now that the nature, we'll look at the gastrointestinal tract and the blood, as these are the sensitive organ systems in terms of whole body exposure, and remembering that it's the proliferating cells that will be primarily affected by radiation. Let's look first at the gastrointestinal tract, because this is an example in which you can identify histologically these three compartments anatomically. Now, the small intestine, the proximal small intestine, in fact, the small intestine in general, which is very sensitive to radiation, is composed of a system of so-called villi and crypts. If you can think of the intestine this way, the villi are projections out into the intestine, and the crypts are down deep in the intestinal wall. Why does it have this kind of system of villi? Because the whole lining of the villi, the whole lining of the small bowel, this way maximizes the surface area of the lining of the small bowel. There's a lot more lining to something like that than just a single round hole. The other thing that I always find is fascinating is that the barrier between the inside and the outside, between the intestinal, the interior of the intestine, and the blood supply is just a single cell thick. It's the cells that line the small bowel. So the next slide, is just a schematic representation of one of these crypts here and the villus up here. So the intestinal stem cells, the cells that are dividing the progenitor compartment, is down here deep in the crypt. As these cells begin to mature, they move up the villus, and as they move up the villus, they are undergoing differentiation. And as they differentiate and become fully differentiated, by the time they reach the base of the villus, they now are fully differentiated, specialized, mature cells. But they keep on moving up, and they move right up the wall of the villus until they reach the top, and at which point they die and are sloughed off into the intestine. So this is just a portion of the intestine of the intestinal wall. Now this is a continual movement of cells up the wall, and then they're sloughing off. And this represents the functional compartment. Now in the villus here is a very rich network of capillaries of the microvasculature. So this membrane of a single cell membrane is really all exists between the lumen of the intestine and this very rich blood supply or the blood. And that, of course, there are all kinds of transit of active transport mechanisms that are present in these cells that keep out all the bad things from the intestine that will allow actually also passage of certain things from the blood into the lumen, but also allow for absorption of those things that you want to observe. So what happens when we irradiate following radiation? Well, in essence, as I've said earlier, we will kill the cells in the stem cell compartment. And if you kill all of these cells that have begun maturation will continue to mature and move up the villus. They'll become functional cells and continue to move up and slough off at the top. But as there are no new cells being produced, you end up now with no membrane, no separation from the inside to the outside, from the lumen of the intestine and the blood supply, which is not only a life-threatening occurrence, but actually is almost sure death for the individual. Now, of course, you don't have to kill all of these cells. You may just kill a number of them, and in which case you'll get thinning of this epithelium, but eventually recovery can take place. But this occurs, again, very, very rapidly. This whole lifespan of these cells, they move up within a period of two to three days. Well, this is just, I think, an example that I like to show of a cell renewal system that's easily visualized on a histological section. Now, the clinical effects of the loss of the epithelium are very severe. Abnormal absorption of intestinal breakdown products. As you know, or you may know, the intestine is full of all kinds of bacteria, very gram-negative bacteria that are life-threatening. You can get not only absorption of intestinal breakdown products, but you can get absorption of these bacteria with systemic infections, loss of body fluids, and severe electrolyte disturbances. In essence, this is a very life-threatening effect and probably is the cause of most of the deaths that result from whole-body radiation exposure with fairly large doses. Now, the other system that I'd like to... I'm going to get my watch out here so I don't talk in until 5 o'clock. You never can tell, you know. The next system that I would like to discuss with you is the hematopoietic system, which is the blood-forming system. Now, this is a complex system that differs from this system in that the progenitor compartment and the maturational compartment are actually all mixed up in the bone marrow or for lymphocytes in the lymph nodes, and the mature cells are then released from the bone marrow into the circulating blood. So the circulating blood contains the mature cells, whereas the stem cells and maturing cells are all present in the bone marrow. Now this slide is, let's push the wrong button again. There we go. This is sort of a complex slide. I don't expect you to. It just shows the kinetics of cell renewal. If we're looking at the cells that are the most important ones, the cells that eventually give rise to the granulocytes, which are the primary type of red blood cells, as I've said, that's combat infection. The red blood cells we all know about, and then the platelets. These all appear to arise from a so-called pluripotential stem cell. And this stem cell would represent the functional compartment. This stem cell then begins to mature, and it begins to mature in different ways into cells that will eventually lead to these three types of blood cells. And there's the early stages of maturation in which there can be a certain amount of cell division. Then there's the compartment of the maturational compartment in which no more cell division takes place, and those cells eventually become the functional cells. And as you see, it takes roughly 10 days. It's a little bit less for the red blood cells, but roughly 10 to perhaps 15 days for the granulocytes and about 10 days or somewhat more for the granulocyte chain to move through the maturational compartment, even though this compartment now, of course, is not a physically separate compartment. Now, there are actually many more stages in this maturation than I've shown here, and all of these can be recognized by a hematologist. A hematologist can take a bone marrow sample, and he can recognize which of these families of cells he's looking at, and he can tell you how differentiated they are. In other words, he can recognize a megakaryoblast or a granulocytic megakaryocyte or a myelocyte or a reticulocyte and all the other intermediate stages. And then, of course, at the very end, these all leave into the functional cell compartment. Now, the blood system, the hematopoietic system, is more sensitive than the gastrointestinal tract. So, therefore, looking at the acute radiation syndrome following moderate doses of radiation, it will be primarily abnormalities in the hematopoietic system, which will be the overriding symptoms. It's only when you get to higher doses into close to the lethal range that there's a significant effect on the in the gastrointestinal tract. So let's just take a look at how this actually affects the blood counts. And this is actually a sort of a composite slide taken from the experience of several criticality accidents that occurred in the 1940s and early 1950s. This was put together at the Oak Ridge Lab to show, following a moderate dose of radiation, perhaps of the order of 400 rads or 4 grays, what you would expect to see in terms of changes in blood cells. And this is actually a summary or putting together of a number of different patients. First, let's look at the white blood cell count. And that's the dotted line here. Now, it looks very high. The normal white cell count should be right about here, about 5. Why do we suddenly see it up so high? Well, you may have noted on the previous slide I had granulocytes and tissue granulocytes. And actually, the body contains repositories of tissue granulocytes, which are long-lived and which sit in the tissues and normally don't serve any function, but they're there in case of stress. And in case of stress, these granulocytes are released into the blood system as a protective kind of mechanism. And radiation is one of those stresses. So within a few hours after radiation exposure, the granulocyte count will actually go way up. It'll go up perhaps three times to threefold normal levels due to the release of these tissue granulocytes. Then they'll gradually fall. It may level out here a little bit, and then they really fall to a minimum at around 25 to 30 days after radiation exposure. Likewise, here is the platelet count. Remember that the maturational compartment of the platelets was of the order of 10 to 15 days. And indeed, looking at the scale of days down here, we see the platelet count doesn't drop very much over the period of 10 to 15 days, and then it drops very rapidly, again reaching a nadir at around 25 to 30 days. The lymphocyte count, you may note here, drops very rapidly and then fiddles around a bit. Now, the lymphocytes are an unusual cell. They're one of the few cells in the body that are very sensitive to what we call immediate cell death, or apoptosis has been referred to. They die. They're a non-dividing cell, yet they are killed by really very low doses of radiation. So the lymphocyte count will drop very rapidly within the first day or two after exposure, but a low lymphocyte count is not a life-threatening phenomenon. So the real problem in patients with the hematopoietic syndrome, so-called, is the result of the loss of white blood cells and the loss of platelets. And as you see here, the maximum is of the order of 20 to 30 days, 25 to 30 days. And this is indeed when the patients are very ill and when death occurs following higher doses. There's not much change in the blood count here at early times, up to 2 weeks after exposure. And as we'll see, that is a period of well-being. That's a period when there are really very few symptoms of the radiation exposure. Well, I'll only mention very briefly the skin. The skin is, because of the nature of it, there's very little effect on the skin. Significant cytotoxic damage, cell killing, and problems in the skin probably requires a dose of 10 gray or more. So you may ask, why are we concerned about this in terms of the whole body radiation syndrome? Well, it's primarily because, as I've mentioned, a number of patients who have been exposed to radiation, to penetrating radiation, have also been exposed to high doses of superficial radiation, in which, as we'll see in a case report later on, can cause severe damage to the skin. In fact, at doses of 50 gray or more, any cytotoxic effects may be masked by early vascular effects because of the effects of radiation directly on the small capillaries. This can lead to reddening, and it actually can lead at high doses to rapid of loss of fluid into the tissues, extravasation of fluid into the tissues, or edema, right through damaged vascular walls. So following very high radiation doses, a fair amount of what we see in the skin is due to vascular damage, is due to damage of the microvasculature. Certainly the early effects that occur within a few days after exposure, because the actual cytotoxic effects, killing of progenitor cells in the skin, will again be a delayed effect that would you expect to see 2 or 3 weeks after exposure to radiation. I've explained this somewhat more. You can read it in your in your outline. Finally, just a word about cataract formation. Indeed, the lens of the eye is indeed a rather unusual type of cell renewal system, and one can get, as a result of this, abortive attempts to form lens fibers. It's a delayed effect of the formation of cataracts. It occurs of the order of 1 to 10 years after radiation, and even longer latent periods have been reported. And it occurs at not very high doses, but of doses of the order of 2 gray or higher. But it is a complication, but a complication that's easily treated surgically if a patient survives and develops cataracts at some times later. Well, I was asked if I would say a word about the embryo and fetus, which I didn't, and they're found on page 9 and 10 of your outline. And indeed, I think everything I will say and more is pretty clearly stated there. But I think what's important about the embryo, as was indicated in an earlier talk today, is that the embryo is sensitive to quite low doses of radiation exposure, certainly much lower doses than will cause any symptoms of the acute radiation, any symptoms in the adult in terms of acute radiation exposure. It's important to know, I think, about the stages in embryological development. In the first 10 to 14 days after conception is when the whole embryo is in its very early stages, developing from a single cell, fertilized cell, into multiple cells. And probably during that early period, the killing of almost any cell will disrupt the embryo enough so that it will not survive. And indeed, irradiation during this period, the first 10 or 15 days after conception, leads to prenatal mortality. If there's any effect, the embryo is killed. And in fact, in many cases, the person will never realize that they have been pregnant. However, after the first 10 to 15 days, the embryo enters what's the period that's called major organogenesis. This occurs from the end of the second through about the 7th week of gestation, and this is when the various organ systems are forming, and they're not all undergoing formation at the same time. They take place at a various schedule so that today and tomorrow it might be the stomach, and the next day it might be the spine, and the day after that, 5 days after that, it might be the liver. Now, radiation exposure during this time can be associated with severe congenital abnormalities in surviving fetuses, as they're not life-threatening in a sense. The embryo will usually survive. Now, this has been shown very clearly in experimental animals, in mice, and I tell you about some of the mouse studies there. But at fairly low doses, at doses of perhaps as low as 0.25 gray, you can induce and recognize such abnormalities in experimental animals, but they haven't really been seen in human studies or very well codified. But there is the real effect that is of concern is the effects on the neuroblasts. Now, the neuroblasts are the precursor cells for the neurons of the central nervous system. And the neuroblasts will be developing and growing during the period of major organogenesis, but they will also continue growing during the so-called fetal period of growth and development up to through the 5th or maybe the 6th month even of gestation. So we have a continual growth over a long period of time of the neuroblasts, and these cells will then, of course, form the neurons, which are the postmitotic functional cells, as I said, which once they're formed at the 4th to the 6th month of gestation, they're the ones that we're going to live with all our lives. The sort of biological effect of radiation is, in essence, a depletion in the number of neuroblasts, which is not readily recoverable. And therefore, the types of symptoms that have been recorded are the symptoms associated with a loss of neuroblasts, and therefore of a loss in the normal population of functional neurons. And this has been studied most clearly in the atom bomb survivors in terms of microcephaly, that's a small head, mental retardation, and along with that, actual diminution in IQ scores. Now, the question has been, at what dose do we see these? And although there have been trends at very low doses, it's only when you get to doses above 0.2 to 0.5 gray, or of the order of 20 to 50 rads, that one sees significant effects in terms of mental retardation, microcephaly, and so forth. Now, 0.2 to 0.5 gray may sound like a pretty high dose if one is concerned with, you know, background radiation or what may come from an X-ray. But of course, it's a much lower dose than may need to produce any measurable effects in an adult. Now, one thing that has come from these studies of the atom bomb survivors, which, of course, when you get up to doses of 0.5 to 1 gray or higher, you see very clear effects on the central nervous system, is that it occurs following radiation at really a very specific point in time, at between 8 and 15 weeks. In other words, if they've looked at the various periods, the biggest effect and the significant effect, particularly following low doses, is from 8 to 15 weeks of gestation. So that's really starting at the end of the period of major gametogenesis and extending to about four months following gestation. Well, you can read some more details in the thing, but I'd like in the last 15 minutes now to actually talk with you about the acute radiation syndrome in human beings. Derived from a series of things, largely from nuclear reactor and criticality accidents, although as we've seen, there are some other accidents that have occurred also, such as the Guana one in Mexico. There have been overall in all the world about 400 cases described of the acute radiation syndrome. 134 of these actually came from the Chernobyl accident, and there were 28 deaths in that group, or about 30% of the people in Chernobyl who had the acute radiation syndrome actually died. As I pointed out, the organ systems primarily involved are the blood-forming systems, hematopoietic system, largely the result of infections, occult infections, sometimes infections that are difficult to find, as a result of the loss of granulocytes, and hemorrhaging as the result of the loss of platelets. And this can be, you know, rectal hemorrhaging, can be hemorrhaging into the eye, can be hemorrhaging most anywhere. If these effects are treatable, you can treat the infections with antibiotics, and very often, even if you know someone's had a high dose, they'll start them right on a regime of an antibiotic regime. And the hemorrhages can be treated by packed platelets. You can now give people packed platelets, The mean lifespan of the platelets in any group will be about 5 days, so you'll be able to do this to carry people over that bad period at the bottom, here. Now, whereas the maximum effect is around 25 days following the hematopoietic syndrome, moderate doses of radiation, the gastrointestinal tract has a maximum effect at around 7 days after exposure, and in this case, the people develop abdominal pain, vomiting, diarrhea, fluid and electrolyte loss. It's really a disaster, and there really is no good treatment. Way some of these people have been treated, which is reasonable, is to start them right out on large doses of non-absorbable antibiotics. In other words, those antibiotics that will remain in the gut and will not be absorbed into the body. So in essence, to sterilize the gut. So at least in that case, one will prevent one of the major complications of gastrointestinal failure, and that is the absorption of the normal intestinal flora, bacterial flora, into the bloodstream, and therefore a systemic blood infection with some of these very difficult gram-negative bacteria. Another effect that occurs at relatively moderate doses is epilation, the loss of hair. We'll see that in the case report, but this is usually reversible and not life and threatening. And then I've mentioned the skin effects. There have been two or three people that have died from very high radiation exposure that have been called the central nervous system failure or cardiovascular collapse. But what this essentially is not a direct effect on the central nervous system or the heart per se, but largely a result of damage to the microvasculature, leading to edema and to the complications disruption and leaking from the wall of the microvessels. Now, what about the general dose-response relationships? I've been talking about high doses and moderate doses, and you may be saying, what the hell does he mean by that? So let me tell you now. Less than 1 sievert or 100 rads is rarely asymptomatic. I would say probably 90% of people who have received a whole-body exposure of 100 rads or 1 sievert will not have any symptoms. On the other hand, with about 2 sieverts or 200 rads, all individuals will probably show some symptoms, though they may be fairly mild. On the other hand, death begins with exposures as low as 4 to 5 sieverts, and 6 or 6.5 sieverts is probably fatal to most people, and 8 sieverts or more will be fatal to everybody. It's a rather narrow window. Let me show you a very ancient slide, but I think it explains this. The discerning student will note this is pretty ancient because the dose is not even given in rads, it's given in rentgens. I think this dates from the 1950s as a result of those early criticality accidents. But this is an attempt to show, based on the data they had then, at about the doses that would the lowest to the highest that would lead to sickness, as opposed to that would lead to cell death. Now I think we'd believe that with these were untreated people. Now we know with treatment, with aggressive treatment, particularly of the hematopoietic dysfunction, we can move this curve over a bit. But even at that, about this implies that about 50% of the people will show sickness at the area of around 150 rads or 1.5 sieverts, whereas about 50% of the people will die at doses, in this case around about 450. Actually, now this may be pushed over to as high as 600. But I think what is striking to me is it's a very narrow window, a narrow window in terms of doses between the dose that will make people even sick versus the dose that will actually kill people. And in this dose range here, is the dose range where the major effect is on the blood-forming system, and it's where aggressive treatment can have a real effect, a real positive effect. Because when one gets into the higher ranges where one has significant damage and denudation of the small bowel, we get into a situation that's very difficult to treat and is largely lethal. Now, I mentioned earlier, I showed you that previous slide, maybe I'd even get back to it, and said that this effect is not going to be seen. I mean, the effect is really only marked here between maybe 15 and 30 days, and it's the maximal ill effect is around 25 days. Well, this relates to the sort of clinical stages of the radiation syndrome. The initial or prodromal stage, so-called, which occurs between maybe 2 to 4 hours up to perhaps 2 days after exposure, is not well understood, but it's marked by anorexia, that's loss of appetite, by nausea, by fatigue, maybe even by some vomiting. But then it clears up by about 2 days after exposure. And from 2 days to a period of 10 to 14 days, is a period of general well-being. Now, psychological effects have been mentioned earlier, and I think one does have to be cognizant of these. There was an accident in Puerto Rico back, I think, in the 1980s, where all the alarms went off in one of these nuclear facilities, and the red lights flashed, and they said, there's been a major radiation excursion. Everyone must rush out of this hospital. They called the ambulance, and these workers sort of stumbled out, and they were nauseated, and one of them was vomiting and everything else, and they rushed them to the hospital. And it was only a few hours later that they were able to take measurements to determine what actual dose these people had received. And it turns out that all of them had received less than 25 rads. That's 0.25 sieverts. And the fellow who was really sick hadn't received any radiation at all. So I think we've seen that before. If people believe that there's been that they have been really exposed to radiation, there can be significant psychological reaction to this, even in terms of acute radiation exposure. And I can also give you a little story about the latent period, this period of well-being. I've actually seen that myself when I was for 6 months at the hospital in Oak Ridge, and this was back in the late 1950s, and they were interested in an experimental treatment for leukemia with whole-body radiation exposure. They said, if you give just a radiation dose to a given organ, you can give them 2,000 or 3,000 rads, but if it's the whole body, you'll kill them with 600 rads. Perhaps we can do the same thing for a cancer like leukemia. So they irradiated this young woman who had leukemia. Before that, they took out some bone marrow so that they would be able to give her back her bone marrow at this period here. And she didn't feel well in the first day or two, not very dramatically, but then for about 2 weeks, she just looked fine. She was asymptomatic, and we all said, my gosh, that radiotherapist, he forgot to turn the X-ray machine on. Well, it turned out he had turned it on because by the second, third week after exposure, she became very, very ill, but the bone marrow graft actually took, so she did survive, but her leukemia unfortunately finally got her 4 or 5 months later. Well, after that, the stage of so-called manifest illness ensues with the symptoms that I've talked to you about, plus a few others. And if the person survives for about 6 weeks, then rapidly there's a rapid regaining of all of these blood counts. There's obviously, if a person has lived that long, they must have recovered in terms of their GI symptoms. The recovery, the clinical improvement becomes very rapid, although complications of high-dose exposure to the skin may persist. Well, I'm not going to say a great deal, given the time, about the next slide. You can look at this yourself, but this is a slide developed actually by the Oak Ridge people again to an attempt to determine what clinical radiation group a patient might fall into based on their early symptoms. We heard early about trying to make biological dosimetry in terms of Charles Geard talked in some length about cytogenetics, looking at lymphocytes, and also by looking actually trying to determine lymphocyte counts. There's some people that have tried to correlate the degree of rapidity with which the lymphocyte counts dropped with the dose received. But this is just separating the people into several groups, and by looking at the various symptoms, you can look at this in the peace and quiet of your own home before you go to bed tonight and see how it works out. But the idea being that 0 to 150 REM, you really just send the people home. Their symptoms will be mild. They don't need any treatment. The area, the group that you want to treat aggressively is group 2 and some of the people in the lower range of group 3. But once you get up into these groups here, you might as well send the people home too, because they're going to die, and there's no question about it. This is I say that somewhat facetiously, but this is in the case of really a major disaster, where suddenly a local hospital has to deal with tens or hundreds of people who may have been irradiated. Well, let me finish up in showing you a case report, which I sort of enjoy doing. I've got to get my notes out here. I now completely confuse the issue. There we go. Got them. I think this is an interesting case, but it's also sort of a historic case. It's the case of a 26-year-old male who was exposed to radiation as the result of a criticality accident at Los Alamos in March of 1945. He was the first person that was exposed to such whole-body radiation and finally died from the radiation syndrome. This is just actually to show you his actual blood count. You can see the red blood count, as we've shown, changed very little over this period of 25 days. The platelet count didn't do much, and then it began to drop. He then got blood transfusions, and it came back up again, but it dropped down here, reaching a minimum around 20 days after exposure. We have, again here, the rapid rise due in the granulocyte count due to the the release of granulocyte, tissue granulocyte supplies. Then the granulocyte count fell down. It's not clear why it rose at this point, but then it fell down completely and reached a minimum here around 24 days after exposure. Now, this is the example, and I think a useful one, of an individual who received a high dose of whole-body radiation from penetrating, whole-body exposure from penetrating radiation, as well as very high local doses to the skin. He's a 26-year-old male who was hospitalized within 25 minutes of the accident. It was determined that he received about 630 rads, 6.3 sieverts of whole-body exposure, but of the order of 20,000 rads, which is, I think, 200, am I right, sieverts to his right hand, and 3 to 5,000 rads, which would be 30 to 50 sieverts to his left hand. So we have the complications, which have been seen since in a number of individuals, of a big dose of whole-body exposure, as well as a very high dose of localized exposure to the skin. Well, on day one, he felt weakness, anorexia, that's loss of appetite, nausea, and some vomiting. But by day two, he was improved. His appetite returned, he ate well, and his only symptoms were related to his hands, in which he felt some numbness. By day 5, he noted a rise in temperature, the first rise in temperature, which progressively increased until it reached 106 degrees Fahrenheit on day 24. Day 10, he felt nauseated, crampy abdominal pain and distension, but these symptoms disappeared a few hours later. By day 12, he had developed ulceration of the mucous membranes of his mouth, which subsided by day 17. However, from day 17 on, he gradually went downhill. He lost weight, although his sensorium was intact and he remained alert, with an excellent morale up till about day 21. But on day 24, he became comatose. His fever reached 106 degrees Fahrenheit, and he died with a total agranulocytosis. Now, agranulocytosis means just no white blood cells at all. Well, this is a photograph on the day 42 hours after exposure, showing the marked swelling and the early blistering. Blistering of his right hand, the one that received the extremely high dose. And this is due to direct effects on the walls of the small blood vessels, leading to extravasation of tissue, of fluid, or what we call edema, into the tissues of the hand. Now, the next slide is, I can look at it right here. I don't have to point at it. The next slide, I'll get up there anyway. The next slide is a picture of him taken 3.5 days after exposure. And you see, he looks pretty, he's a hirsute individual, lots of hair in his chest, looks pretty well, except for now the marked swelling here in his hands. And if you look at his a close-up of his hands, you can see the marked blistering and so forth, and beginning changes in this hand that received a lower dose of 3,000 to 5,000 rads. Now, in terms of his hands, this is what we saw 9 days after exposure. He's now really getting complete breakdown of his skin, probably largely, again, effect on the blood vessels, really lack of a proper perfusion of his hands, maybe also some cytotoxic effects directly on the cells, the skin cells. This is a picture of his torso 12 days after exposure, showing reddening or erythema of the trunk here. That is an effect, again, on the blood vessels. And you can see up here, not very well, the so-called stomatitis, or the inflammation and ulceration occurring in his tongue. And you can see actually a detail of that here. That's an odd effect that subsided by day 17, which is shown in this picture. His hands are bandaged up here. You can see very clearly here the reddening of his skin. You can't see very well, but his ulceration of his mouth is now gone away. This is a picture taken on day 20, and he's now beginning to lose his hair. You see, the criticality accident occurred. Actually, he was leaning over a vat, and it went critical. So he got the big dose to his hands, which were right there, and then it came up and hit his torso, and to a certain extent, his face. So this is the epilation, or loss of hair, which is common about this period, a period in time. And if you look at, again, at his torso on day 24, now we're actually beginning to get breakdown of the skin, and there's a lot of loss of hair even there. You can see loss of hair in his axilla. You can't see it too well on this picture, and, of course, in the upper chest. Well, he died on age 24. By that time, he actually showed beginning gangrene in his hands, and that is an effect of loss of vascular perfusion, effect on the blood vessels. And actually, in some of these cases, in people that have survived, one has had to amputate the hand, and then, sometimes later on, because there are delayed effects on the vessels, which I mentioned in here, They would develop gangrene in the stump and would have to go through two or three sequential amputations until one reached an area where the blood vessels were really competent. Now, the last slide is just simply a pathological slide of his heart, only done to show all the subcapillary hemorrhaging. There was also hemorrhaging into the omentum of the bowel, a slide that I don't have anymore. And this is actually evidence of the bleeding tendency due to the lack of platelets. Well, I hope this has been sort of interesting to actually see a case report of the kind of exposure which we hope that we won't entail. But there have been 400 of them in the past, and this is a possibility, at least, that we'll deal with more of the acute radiation syndrome, though we hope not, as a result of terrorist activities. Thank you.
Questions? I guess one question would be, Jack, if they develop some type of effective biodosimetry, at what dose would you just recommend no care? I mean, where you, not even a marrow transplant and antibiotics would help.
I think that in the order of 100 to 150 rads, let's say 100 rads, there's probably going to be no symptoms. I think if you get up to 200 rads or 2 sieverts where you're having some minimal symptoms, you might want to watch carefully and utilize antibiotics and that kind of thing. You mentioned what a trans...
No, I'm saying at what dose would you just recommend no therapy, that it's hopeless? I mean,
hopeless.
If you're triaging... if there was some kind of mass exposure and you had to triage, what dose would you just say it's just futile?
No one has apparently survived 800 rads. So I probably would say 1,000 would be a very safe one.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other questions?
Yes, sir.
From a physician's point of view, I always worry about saying don't treat anybody. And the problem with getting a dose of 1,000 rads, you're talking about a situation where it's a instantaneous dose or over a very short period of time into the whole body. And that's kind of difficult to do. And even in the patient that you just showed, you know, I'm wondering if today he might have survived because of GCSF or other factors, cytokines that we have to stimulate what marrow. Maybe he had some marrow left in his legs or something like that, and his white count wouldn't have gone that low. So I think even high doses, you got to have some hope.
Oh, I think that now he received 630 rads, so that is certainly within the area with people now with aggressive treatment will survive. 1,000 rads, the problem is... the gastrointestinal tract. If you denude the gastrointestinal tract, it's very, and I think you could probably realize that, you can give people supportive therapy. And I think these kind of doses, I don't think you'd send them home. You'd try to support them. But the supportive therapy, as I say, trying to clean the bowel out of bacteria, at least I don't think there's much you can do. I think the hematopoietic syndrome, one can really deal with. At least that's my impression. I'd love to talk with you about that. Well, thank you all very much.